Across the world, gender inequalities are large and persistent. We have inequalities in the area of basic human rights. We have inequalities in terms of power in the public and the private spheres. There is, of course, the issue of control over economic resources, whether we talk about education, health, land, finance, information, technology, earnings, and employment. Inequalities are large. They are everywhere. There are, of course, other types of inequality which are more difficult to quantify. There is the issue, for instance, of access to joint income and assets in the household. There are issues associated with enforced female seclusion as well as domestic violence. Amartya Sen, who has devoted considerable time to the issue of gender equality in his writings, tells us that reducing or ameliorating these gender inequalities can greatly contribute to empowering women and enhancing her well-being. Nevertheless, it seems to me that we should derive some degree of comfort because today there is much greater recognition of two important factors. One is that the subjugation of women has contributed to a whole range of social ills and dysfunctions and has shown to us the heavy costs associated with the repression of women and the postponement of her aspirations. Furthermore, I think there is also greater recognition everywhere that moving towards greater gender equality need not be seen as a zero-sum game that necessarily implies loss for men. I think gender equality is fundamentally about evolving to a stage where being born a boy or a girl is not going to determine one's rights or the opportunities that one will have in life to develop one's human potential. Now, the Women, Business, and the Law project looks at all legal instruments in 143 countries, accounting for 98% of the global economy. We look at the Constitution, the Civil Code, the Family Law, and other laws and documents, the way in which governments often use the law to discriminate against women in some way, to shape or limit the opportunities that are available to her, to create a legal environment that places her at a disadvantage in terms of her ability to meaningfully contribute to the economy. For instance, to give you a few examples, we know that the law can give control of household assets to married men, preventing the wife from utilizing those assets as collateral to access the financial system. This is a widespread problem throughout the developing world. The law can impose restrictions on decision-making or mobility, requiring women permission from husbands to work or to travel. The law can impose limits on working hours or the types of industries they can work in, excluding her from major sectors of the economy, which then, of course, contributes to widen the gender gap in pay. In a large number of countries, the law designates husbands and heads of households, which then means that they control key decisions, such as choosing the family residence or obtaining official documents, which very often are important in the area of business and entrepreneurship. To give you one final example, there is an article in Iran's civil code, I think it is Article 1117, which states that a husband can prevent his wife from occupations which are incompatible with the family interests or the dignity of himself or his wife. Needless to say, the civil code does not include an equivalent clause as pertains a woman's right to prevent her husband from occupations that might be incompatible with the family interests and so on. Women, Business, and the Law has developed a particular set of methodologies to collect the data once we have decided to document the contents of these legal instruments. And it's essentially through the posing of particular questions that will be the starting point for understanding what the law says. For instance, can a woman get a job or pursue a trade or profession in the same way as a man? Can she register a business in the same way as a man? Can she travel outside her home? Can she travel outside the country? Are married women required by law to obey their husbands? Do men and women have equal ownership rights to property? Can non-pregnant, non-nursing women do the same jobs as men? Are there specific tax deductions that are applicable only to men? Are there criminal sanctions for sexual harassment? Is there a non-discrimination clause covering gender in the Constitution? I think you begin to get the idea. We basically pose these questions, 47 of them altogether. They all involve some form of restriction, and a few of them apply only to married women, such as, for instance, the issue of obeying their husbands. The vast majority apply both to married and unmarried women, such as issues of job prohibitions and so on. The answers that one obtains to these 47 questions across 143 countries then are basically the basis, the database, which then we use to analyze the state of gender equality in the world. These 47 restrictions, which capture different dimensions of the law, are then mapped into seven broad categories. We look at issues that have to do with access to institutions, with the use of property, with getting a job, with providing incentives to work. We also look at issues of building credit, going to court, and protecting women from violence. Altogether, since we have 47 questions for which we seek answers in these legal documents, and we are covering 143 countries, it means that we have over 6,700 data points. And the question that I want to address now is basically, what does the data show? And I am referring in particular to Women, Business and the Law 2014, the latest report published by the World Bank on this subject.